You can't have prosperity with stolen land. Period.
Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on, my lord? Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on?
See, I gotta draw a line, I can't take it no more. If you ain't down with revolution, what you waiting for? Making money for suckers and not communities poor. Ripping flags off of coffers, man, this ain't our war. Colonized and terrorized by the world's biggest killers. The US government, the biggest weapon and drug dealers. Filling prisons with children, incarcerating the future. MySpace and Facebook got us stuck on computers. Stuck on stupid bumping music that's abusive to the shorties. And the nonsense that you spitting, they just listen and absorbing. I've been dormant, I've been working. I'm a giant, I'm ready. I'm with the Apple and Oaxaca, and we hold the machetes. I rock hard like Palestinian children holding slingshots. I'm with every single kid that's down for hip hop, for the culture, the life, what it really stands for. This music is resistance, it's the voice of the poor. I'm on the side of the workers, the teachers, and lunch ladies. On the streets with brown mommies raising our brown babies. I'm with youth organizers cleaning up the Bronx River. I'm like Jaime Escalante when I stand and deliver. I'm with Evo Morales, man, he running Bolivia. Distribution of the land so we can all live bigger. I'm with Hugo and Fidel, Grandmaster and Melly Mel. I'm with the Panthers up in Queens, justice for Sean Bell. I'm with Camacho Negron, I'm with Ojeda Rios. Freedom for Oscar López, time to get an appeal. I'm with a blue Jamal, I'm with a Sada Shakur. I'm with the compas in the market, he getting a penny more.
Welcome to the Houston Indie Media News Show. Tonight's show features audio from last weekend's People's Tribunal on Hurricane Harvey Recovery, where the city was put on trial for its shitty response to Hurricane Harvey last year. Residents, community leaders, and experts testified during the two-day event, and together the community imagined creative solutions that could move Houston toward becoming more resilient to future climate disaster. At the end of our show, we will play the verdicts. You can watch all of the tribunal on the Sierra Club Texas Facebook page.
So this is going to be a fantastic day as we remember the lives lost, but also the direction that we need to go to build a brighter future that is inclusive, that's full of equity, that makes sure that our voices are a driver in the process. I'm Mustafa Santiago Ali. And it's an honor to be here with you. It's good to come back home. I say come back. Folks, remember the 1.2 trillion gallons of water that came from Hurricane Harvey. Many folks in the room also know that it cost $125 billion. And those numbers continue to grow because we have not yet resolved the issues that are going on inside of our communities. I think it's about 138,000 homes that were damaged. And also destroyed. James Baldwin once said that if I love you, y'all either Google him or write this down. If I love you, I have to make you conscious of the things that you don't see. Think about how many times we talk about the things that are happening inside of our communities. When we talk about what's going on in the Manchester community, and how when you go there on certain days, you breathe in and you're expecting air, but you feel like you're breathing in gasoline fumes. For most folks in the country, they can't conceptualize how that could be in our country. But sometimes we have to illuminate that for folks. when we tell folks about the experiences that we have with these climate disasters, these extreme weather events, and they look on the television for a few days and then they forget about the people who are still there every day dealing with these situations that are compounded upon the fact that we have 200,000 people in our country who die prematurely from air pollution. But yet the petrochemical facilities in our community here are allowed to continually push emissions up and into our lungs, into our children's lungs, and then, of course, into the atmosphere and why we have these extreme storms. So that's the reason we have to continue to highlight these issues for folks. They forget the fact that 27 million people in our country have asthma, 7 million children. And it is our children, African-American and Latino children, who are primarily the ones who are going to the emergency rooms and who are losing their lives. That's the reason that we continue to highlight these issues for folks. And that's the reason that we also understand that when these extreme storms continue to come and they do their startup shutdown and push all those emissions out, that's something that folks deal with every day on the Gulf Coast and across the country. And that's the reason that we fight. That's the reason that we continue to highlight these issues that are going on.
All right. Our first testimony is going to be from Sarai.
Thank you. My name is Sarai Garcia, and I am a nurse of 15 years of experience. I specialize in LTAC, which is long-term acute care, and I dealt with a lot of infectious diseases. I am also a community activist, organizer, and after Harvey, myself and Rosie Soto started the Aftermath, the pop-up project, because we saw a need in the hood. I was asked to speak about environmental racism because we experienced that and we're still living it today. The area where we focused most of our efforts was in the east side of Houston. And I wrote some things down to make sure that I got my point across. In the east side of Houston, there are refineries, chemical plants, and landfills. There's actually two landfills within a 3-mile radius of the neighborhood that we worked in, Lakewood Forest, okay? And let's see. The floodgates, that residence normally doesn't flood, but when the floodgates were opened, it did. And the waters came rushing. There was no advance warning from the city, and basically these people were left to fend on their own, fend for themselves. There was no organized rescue as well. The only rescue efforts that came to that community were from the community itself. We never saw police, we never saw fire, we never saw National Guard in these communities doing any type of rescues. And we didn't see FEMA or Red Cross in the neighborhoods in the aftermath. The Red Cross showed up to some neighborhoods and where we received reports where they were asking for legal status before they would help. Basically, all of this puts together leads me to the issue of mental health, because while these people were not warned and the water was rushing in to their homes, and they were sitting there in feces waiting to be rescued, because that's what happened. The landfill is directly over them, and when the flood water came, everything came to them. So, these people were waiting. We heard so many stories. I suffer from PTSD, and I did not go, I did not experience not even 1% of what this population did. My PTSD comes from the stories that I've heard from them. So children who were rescued did not know where their parents were. They waited for 2-3 days to know what had happened to their parents, family that were separated, not knowing. And we have to remember, they lost everything. There was no way of communicating, and they were basically in an island where no one was coming to help. I'm sorry, I deviated a little bit from my notes. So the this the issue of PTSD is not even being addressed. I believe and I feel wholeheartedly from the experiences that I've had with people throughout Houston every time it rains that Houston suffers from PTSD in general. And that is an issue that is very concerning and which leads to another issue, the health ramifications that we are seeing right now, immediately within 2-3 weeks after Hurricane Harvey and up to right now, that are not being addressed. So, and we have to realize, too, there's a lot of people that cannot afford insurance or are underinsured. So that's another issue that we have, the accessibility to, basically, if you have one of those reoccurring skin rashes, to actually be able to go treat it. So these are the symptoms that we are seeing very often. The headaches, the reoccurring rashes, neurological things, kind of like dementia-type symptoms, and respiratory issues. And none of this is being addressed by the city, the county, the state, or the national or in the federal level. The EPA hasn't addressed and none of the things that we have been exposed to. We don't even know what we have been exposed to. And these people of lower income communities, they haven't been able to rebuild as fast and as quickly. We were just down there at Thursday, and there's still debris out there. And the city when I brought this up, I was basically called a liar. So we have an issue with our elected officials not listening to our concerns. That's another major issue. Thank you.
We have one more person that wants to speak who's from an impacted community, and that's Judith.
Thank you. So hello, my name is Judith Nieto. And I grew up in the community of Manchester here in Houston. And I'm hearing all these stories, and I mean, this is something that we see and live through every year, every hurricane season. My family gets really nervous. We don't know if we should leave or we should stay. Usually the community doesn't flood, but we're surrounded by industry, so a lot of the times the industries lose power and they malfunction during rains and during the hurricanes. And so there's a lot of emissions after and during the events. My family usually gets really sick right after. But during Harvey, I actually wasn't here, but I was on a text message thread with my family, constantly giving them alerts. Because I'm on the outside, I'm looking at all the news and I'm getting all these alerts for all these refineries that are malfunctioning and all of these different events that they are not aware of. But by then, they couldn't leave because everything around them was flooded. So they were trapped in Manchester under this toxic plume. And still, since then, the refineries have not been the same. They continue to malfunction constantly, and there's always explosions. There was even an event a few days ago where my grandmother took pictures and actually learned to text, finally, because I wasn't around. And the floor was at the park, and the playground was burning up. There was like a fire underground that we couldn't figure out where it was coming from, and we think that maybe there was a rupture in one of the pipes. There's expansion happening right now in the Valero refinery down the street from where my family lives, so it could have been a fire underneath the ground that they couldn't put out, and it was coming up into the ground and burning the ground in the playground. But this is things that we see every day. You know, people in the community just kind of learn to deal with it and accept it. And a lot of the times they don't know how to engage in changing these things happening because they see it happen so often and they see it just go under the rug and see that the elected officials and the people that could potentially say something or change something don't do anything at all and just tell the people that it'll be fine and that they're safe and that the refineries that they're living next to are the safest in the country and that they're going to expand and they're going to offer more jobs and the people living in the communities will actually be able to have those jobs. So, you know, people just kind of let it go. But I do see that more and more young people are becoming more anxious and nervous about being in the neighborhood because they see that their parents, their grandparents are getting more sick. There's more cancer rates. We have families, generations of families dying from cancer, grandmothers, kids, of the same family that grew up in that community. And, you know, that's a scary thing to think about when you're living in a community where you can't really afford to live anywhere else. And with development happening all around the city, it's just becoming more and more expensive. And so there is no other place to live. And even if Valero decides to buy out the community, there's no other place that they could afford to live. And the community doesn't want to be separated from each other. You know, so it would be wonderful if the whole community just got relocated together. But that's something that is too hard to think about because in Houston we have so many communities just like that. And it would be so hard to think about how to relocate all of them. And to be equitable, you know, we have to include all these communities no matter how big they are. Manchester is predominantly Latino community. A lot of undocumented people live there, as you probably heard earlier. And a lot of low-income people live there. So they don't really have the resources to just pick up and leave, you know, and find another place. So the PTSD issue, I think, is a very real issue. Mental health is very real in that community, though that also is not being talked about, because really the first thing that people want to talk about is their lack of resources. And already their houses are being affected by the explosions and the big booms that happen in the community that crack the foundation and break the windows. And so now you add a climate disaster, you know, it's just unthinkable. They're not able to have that capacity to think about what that would look like. And I mean, just it doesn't seem like more people outside of Manchester really realize how impacted the whole city is. You know, it's not just an issue of Manchester or like just them dealing with these issues. It's the whole city. Like, we're all living under this nasty benzene cloud, and the sky hasn't been the same. I don't know if you've noticed that every time that it rains, it just gets a really weird color, and the next day it's just really misty. You couldn't even see downtown from the Ship Channel anymore when you used to be able to do that. Now it's all foggy and misty, and it's just, you know, the physical evidence of that there's something in the air constantly. And yeah, I don't know, I think that communities, it's just really beautiful to see all of these other communities coming together and finding intersections and all of the things that we're dealing with, because this isn't just an issue of climate change or environmental injustices. This is migration, immigration, you know, and all of these other isms that we're dealing with because of institutional racism and because of environmental racism, and not acknowledging the people that are most impacted and how they are working together to actually create a good network of people to be able to support each other. But thank you. Thank you for being here, and thank you for offering space to be able to testify.
It's been a long 2 days, but I think it's a really beautiful start to helping build a movement here in Houston. And looking at these issues and some others, you know, that have emerged, and working on these and meeting families and going to different communities. There were some glaring themes that emerged also that we hadn't recognized. And one was that a lot of the people we spoke with, whether it was on immigration or workers or housing or environment, that it was women of color often who were holding down the home and helping rebuild, and who were left, you know, to do it on their own and falling through the cracks. So maybe, you know, not maybe, definitely there are other glaring omissions, you know, in our tracks, but these are the ones that we had already identified and had been working on, and they should grow, and they will grow. To complete the tribunal portion, we wanted to read the statements from the judges, and I want to thank all the judges who participated, their time, their professional opinions and experience, and all the witnesses who had to relive all of the, you know, things that happened to them, that continue to happen to them. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to get up and speak about that in public. You know, and as Colette said, 13 years later, after Hurricane Katrina, you know, these issues are still happening. You know, and the stories that she heard are the same ones, you know, that were heard 13 years ago, and that are heard after every disaster, not just here in the Gulf Coast, but in many other places of the world. So with that, I want to bring back up Zoe, your amazing hostess of the tribunal.
Hello, I'm Zoe Middleton. I work with Texas Housers, and I'm going to be reading the findings from the housing track. All right, so I'll get started very, very briefly with some really high-level findings from our judges. And these are the indictments, so to speak, the findings that we know that are wrong that need to change. And then on Monday, we're going to have these fleshed-out, really beautiful, hopeful recommendations that we want to make. So here is what we found for housing. And these were... And these were developed by the co-director of my organization, John Henneberger, Dr. Sada Richards, who's from Third Ward. Just looking in case she like popped out somewhere and wanted to read these. And Vera Lisa Hunter, who works with Covenant CDC and is also a member of TOP. Okay. So number one, the requirements to fully qualify for recovery funding don't fit the reality and context of how people live. Communities that are already suffering from systemic disinvestment experience compounded inequality after disasters. That. Finding number two, immigrants, renters, and other vulnerable populations were denied access and accessible, clear, safe recovery options. Finding number three, there was negligent coordination between city, state, and federal entities in the provision of recovery services and rescue services. Finding number four, there was not an accurate and reliable means of assessing direct and indirect storm damage, which is then how people receive assistance. And number five, the process of transferring property ownership and control over a property is overcomplicated and inaccessible disaster survivors, especially low-income people of color. Next on my Google Doc are the labor findings.
Hi, y'all. My name is Chris. I work for Faye Justicia Worker Center along Alejandro, who was on one of the panels this afternoon. So the labor findings are as follows. Fact one, wage theft was widespread as second responders, many of them migrant workers, worked for unscrupulous contractors. When it came time to file formal complaints, the contractors were usually impossible to locate. Finding two, many of the work sites that violated laborers' right to safety were government financed. However, FEMA was not liable for the mistakes of its subcontractors. Number three, worker safety was sacrificed in the name of getting work done quickly. Workers were without gloves, masks, and hard hats, leading to injuries and exposure-related illnesses. Number four, workers, especially second responders, suffered health impacts, some of them chronic and or life-threatening. The health impacts were both physical, skin rashes, respiratory distress, back injuries, allergies, heat stroke, and mental and emotional, including stress and depression. And number five, workers endured excessive hours, 12 to 16 hour days, resulting in extreme fatigue, and increased risk of accident or injury. And next up is immigration findings.
Hi, I'm Mama Rosie. I am feeder of the hungry. Immigration findings. Number one, barriers to the emergency shelters and disaster relief benefit discriminate against immigrants and violate immigrants' rights to equal protection and their economic and social rights to medical care and emergency relief. Number two, all people have the right to protection against national, racial, religious, or xenophobic hatred. Number three, migrants should not, based solely on their status as migrants, be denied the benefits of any social welfare program to which they have contributed, such as programs that help people recover. And number four, migrants, regardless of immigration status, should be protected by labor standard laws, and states should take all appropriate measures to protect migrants from being compelled to accept poor working conditions.
Major findings, point one, abandonment by government. Point two, toxic onslaught hit communities of color hardest. No plan for next disaster or storm. Houston's most impacted communities not in charge of decision-making recommendations. Elected officials and government agencies who have contributed to or endorsed harmful decision-making should be targeted and lose their jobs. Spotlight on frontline communities, fence-line communities, and requests from national climate justice organizations for mobilization. Civil protests and civil disobedience make Harvey-related demands for election campaigns. Elect people to represent communities who will in fact represent communities. Response to point two, shut down refineries before hurricane arrive at, and other preparations, lessons learned from other states or the communities. Moratorium on siting, permitting new toxic infrastructure in EJ communities. Enforce deed restrictions, stronger land use restrictions, more parks and green space. Sustainable redevelopment on brownfield sites, clean up toxic waste sites and Superfund sites to standards. Points for three, class action lawsuits against industrial polluters, transition to cleaner industries. Response to point four, coordinating strategy to empower local leaders and organizations, direct capacity building funding to local people of color organizations and networks, build broad, diverse, and inclusive coalitions to promote just transition, build an equity analysis into all recovery planning and spending, strengthen local NGO alliances with national and international climate and climate justice movement, keep it in the ground actions. Work to detoxify Houston's sacrifice zone neighborhoods, a regional flood plan, a regional antitoxics plan. Major points to five, community right model, that is community rights, civil rights, health rights, human rights, rights of nature. And lastly, we must change the system, not just in Houston, we must do it together. Thank you.
Shout out to all the members of the Houston Indie Media Collective, past and present. This is V, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace.